This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net. Say you're sitting on a mountain of short stories or other short fiction and are unsure what to do with it all. Or perhaps you've got a hankering to write a few shorter works but have no idea what you'd do with them once you wrote and polished them up. Well, today's guest might be able to bring you the clarity you so desire. Hey there, I'm author, writing coach, and RightsCast Network founder R.R. Campbell, and welcome to episode 63 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network. This episode's guest is Andrew J. Peters, a fellow Nine Star Press author who has an anthology coming out later this year. In this episode, we'll tackle what an anthology is and how submitting your short fiction to them or writing and publishing an anthology of your own can be great options for your work. For those unfamiliar, per his bio, Andrew J. Peters is the third most famous Andrew J. Peters on the internet, after the disgraced former mayor of Boston and the very honorable concert organist of the same name. Our Andrew J. Peters is an award-winning author, an educator, and an activist. His novel, The City of Seven Gods, has won or been a finalist for a number of awards, and his Werecat series was a Reader's Choice finalist at the Romance Reviews. He's also written two books for young adults and is the author of the adult novel Poseidon and Clado. His latest title, Irresistible, is a gay rom-com based on the oldest extant romance novel in the world. I was really glad Andrew could join me for this episode, and after listening to it, I'm confident you'll feel the same way. With that said, let's hop into my interview of author Andrew J. Peters. Stay tuned afterward for updates on what you can look forward to next here on the RightsCast Network. Thanks for listening. Thank you very much, Andrew J. Peters, for joining me for this episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network.
Thanks, Ryan. It's great to be here.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting conversation, as I hope many of them are for our listeners, of course. But this one, we're talking about a topic that, you know, you brought to my attention and I had never put a lot of thought into. So this will be a big learning experience for me as well. We're looking at anthologies today, and I think it's worth starting simple. So for those who might not know, what is an anthology?
So I certainly consider that a great place to start. In my other life, I teach at a university, so I'm big on starting at the beginning.
Right.
An anthology is a collection of short stories or essays or poems, usually grouped around a particular theme. They can be written by one author or they can be written by several authors. One popular reference point is J.D. Salinger's Nine Stories that probably most people know, and another is David Sedaris's Naked and Me Talk Pretty One Day, which are collections of humor essays based on the author's life experience. You also see a lot of best of anthologies, like Sundress Publications Best of the Net anthology that takes submissions for short works previously published online. Those, of course, have multiple authors, and probably one of the most well-known is the annual Best American Short Stories, which is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt and takes stories from literary journals like the Paris Review and Glimmer Train.
It sounds like these anthologies can take a lot of different shapes. They can focus on, like you said, maybe it's poetry, it could be short stories, it could be just like David Sedaris's very hilarious Me Talk Pretty One Day. I did have a chance to read that one. That one's very good. So we have a lot of different dimensions that these can sort of take on. The question I have for you, as someone who is in the process of doing this himself, how does one decide to write an anthology, or did you just kind of back your way into it?
Yeah, I can only talk about my own experience, which was pretty spontaneous. I actually grew up writing a lot of short fiction in grade school and high school and in college, but I actually stepped away from it for a long stretch of time as I became interested in novel length work. I'd had a handful of short stories published in journals going back now almost 10 years, but I didn't consider putting together an anthology or even writing more short pieces, frankly, until the beginning of last year. So my story begins with Patreon, actually. In 2018, I wanted to give it a try, and I knew I'd need content, and pretty quickly. So I got the idea to write some short mythological retellings, since that's something I do. It's in my wheelhouse, so to speak. Classical myth has been the inspiration point for a lot of my novels. So I refamiliarized myself with classical mythology, picked out some stories that I hadn't considered before, and I started banging them out and sharing them with reading partners for feedback. Then I published them on my Patreon page, either in their entirety or in installments if they were longer. A couple of creative ideas actually emerged out of that. Just as a tangent, it led into the idea of writing an adventure story where various characters from the short pieces met up. But I also started considering putting the pieces together and pitching an anthology based on retold myth and legend. And toward the end of 2018, I had enough pieces together to propose it to my publisher, Nine Star Press, and happily my editor was interested.
Yeah, it seems like quite the journey there, and you've kind of touched in some ways on the direction I was going to take this next, but let's explore it a little further maybe. Is this idea of what ties these anthologies together? It sounds like for you, you're working a lot with perhaps mythological retellings or different takes on various mythology. Do you find that that is pretty common, or is it often things like theme, or like you said, there might be a character set that is unique to a particular anthology? How did this kind of take shape for you then? At what point in time in this journey did you realize, hey, I might actually be able to turn this into an anthology?
So I think, you know, when I started really enjoying writing these short pieces, and actually, honestly, some of them were quite short. It was somewhat experimental. And, you know, it got me thinking that, you know, these could potentially all come together. And I actually expanded out from there, from the classical mythology to looking at fairy tales, looking to world mythology, etc. But in terms of what brings, you know, anthologies together, though, it can be a lot of different things. I mentioned before, it could simply be a publisher's choice of a best of a particular genre for a particular year. A number of journals do that, for instance. So if they put out issues quarterly, they might include a fifth issue each year based on their top selections. One of my short stories was first published in an issue of the online journal Wild Oats, and then was selected for their best of issue later that year, for example. So, I mean, I think, you know, probably the most common anthologies that you'll find out there are genre-based. There's romance anthologies, horror anthologies, and queer anthologies. And one of my personal favorites that's a little bit more specific was from Northwest Press. They published a couple of superhero anthologies titled Tales of Queer Villainy with a focus on comic book style villains. So sometimes they, you know, can have, you know, be sort of genre within a genre, exploring, you know, a particular character type, or they can be much more general in the case of literary anthologies where they're simply, you know, showcasing what is considered the best work of that particular year.
Yeah, it's really interesting how all of these seem to come together. And it seems like there are instances where you'll have publishers sort of pulling from what's already out in the universe, or publishers might have a general call for submissions. I know that's something Nine Star Press does every year. They look for various holiday stories to kind of fit into all the holidays that fill the back end of the calendar every year. But in your case, you know, you had these short stories and these very short, you know, more experimental pieces that you were kind of sitting on. How was it that you went about pitching this anthology? And it seems like Nine Star in this case was pretty receptive to that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it actually was very straightforward in my particular case. And, you know, I had published my very first novel with Nine Star just last year this time. I have to think about it for a second. And, you know, I had an editor who really liked my work, and she was very enthusiastic about the idea. Did mention that, you know, anthologies can be tougher to market. But in this case, usually when I'm, you know, trying to get my work published, I won't say a wide net, I'd say an informed net. But in this case, I think it was because I was a little skeptical, I guess I could say, about, like, you know, how many places am I really going to find to pitch this? I know that Nine Star likes, genre blending is like one of their, you know, thematic connections, and also LGBTQ. I haven't even talked about that, but that's certainly, you know, a major theme of my collection. So it seemed like it was really the perfect home, and I guess I, you know, was really lucky that, you know, they liked it right away.
Yeah, in your case, you very much had this sort of in with Nine Star. You had a very receptive editor, and all of that certainly helps. Is there any advice you might have for writers who are possibly considering writing something that they see becoming an anthology, or maybe they're sitting on some stories similar to how you were? Do you have any advice for them, who are, for folks who are just looking to approach a publisher or just try to get an anthology published in general?
I guess I probably do. I'm pretty modest about, you know, what stores of wisdom I actually have, but I certainly, on the other hand, am all for, you know, sharing you know, experiences. But I'd say, like with everything, connect with people who like your writing, and that doesn't just have to be, you know, the literary agent or the publisher. I started out publishing short stories in non-paying or nominally paying markets, and that not only helped build my confidence, seeing my work in print, but I met then editors and publishers and other writers who shared new leads and gave me tips. Not incidentally, tips on how to strengthen my own writing. But another example, you know, I remember this was a long time ago when I got my very first short story publication. The journal editor told me, "You're published now. You've got to get a website. Here's some ideas about how to do it." And that sounds like really basic advice nowadays, but this was back in 2009. So it was actually felt kind of revolutionary to me, and, you know, also that, you know, wow, all right, so now I have a platform to build from. A lot of my personal story has been one opportunity leading to another, I guess is the point. So maybe not right away, in some cases maybe not so directly, and a huge resource is other writers, and that's why I'm always happy to give back sharing any information I found out on my own. Then another thing I'd say is a fairly realistic access point for writers is getting into one of those themed anthologies I talked about. So if you write horror, check out journals that publish horror and submit to them. Check out small presses that publish horror and see if they have any open calls for an anthology they're putting together. And you might be so bold to even approach a journal with an idea, you know, very nicely, if, you know, your dream is to, you know, have a horror anthology, is just one example. And then, I mean, I thought, I know your program is all about sharing resources. You know, one that I bet many of your listeners are already quite aware of, but is Duotrope, which is a great searchable database. So from there, you can see, you know, what publishers are both, you know, looking for short stories in a particular genre, and you might find some that are looking to publish anthologies. And another one I recently found is Literarium, which is similar to Duotrope, but free.
With that, let's pause for a moment for a brief word from, well, me. Your book, Our Airwaves, Yes, It's True, Anything is Possible When You Advertise with the RightsCast Network. Hey there, I'm R.R. Campbell, RightsCast Network founder, and I'm here to let you know that you can now advertise your book, podcast, editing services, whatever creative endeavor, you can advertise it here on the RightsCast Network. Not only that, but you can advertise with us for less than $1 a month, yes. We offer packages for as little as less than $1 a month. So get your book, your editing services, podcast, what have you, introduced to hundreds of new listeners by advertising with us today at rightscast.net/advertise or email me at rightscast@gmail.com and we can get started. Let's make it happen for you and your creative endeavors. That's your book, Our Airwaves, rightscast.net/advertise. Well, that's always nice. Is it, I was not aware of Literarium, but Duotrope is something I would definitely encourage listeners to investigate. It is a great resource, and that's actually how I found a few of the platforms where I have shorter pieces published. How does Literarium compare to Duotrope? Would you say that it's as vast of a database, or is it just because it's free, maybe not quite as robust? How does that kind of compare?
Yeah, you know, databases are really tough because things are changing so quickly. And the advantage of Duotrope is that it is, you know, very well, you know, edited, you know, kept up to date, all of that sort of stuff. So I'd say as a caveat with Literarium, probably because it's free and it's volunteer run, It is certainly really big, but you know, I have on occasion found markets that are no longer open or they have changed focus a little bit. So you know, people can kind of decide for themselves whether the money to shell out to do a trope is worth it. I'd probably say yes, but you know, as right if. I feel like most writers are often doing this, like sort of, you know, scoping out the internet in a variety of ways, looking for leads. So it certainly, you know, doesn't hurt to also check out Literarium to the extent that, you know, again, there could be a brand new, you know, journal out there that Duotrope hasn't even added yet, and it's come up on Literarium.
Yeah, and I'll say this for folks who are maybe, they check out Literarium and they're not sure it's for them, but they want to get in on Duotrope. At least when I was using Duotrope, I no longer have a subscription, but I believe it was something like $5 a month, which I know might be tough for some folks, but if you've got that $5 a month and you feel like you're going to have a year, because I believe you have to commit to a year subscription at the start. If you feel like you're going to have a year where short fiction is going to be your focus, or you're already sitting on a bunch of short pieces and you just need to find markets for them, I'd say it's a very worthwhile investment. Because like you say, in your own experience, one door kind of opened, it led to another door which opened for you, which led to another. Same way for me, getting a few short pieces published in various outlets was what opened the door for me to have more confidence and eventually approach Nine Star Press and agents with my longer form fiction.
Yes, yeah, no, I would definitely agree.
And one thing that I think you touched on a couple of minutes ago here that it would be, I'm interested to kind of revisit anyway, and I'm sure listeners are as well, is this idea of marketing anthologies. You mentioned that this can be a bit of a challenge, or at least it's perhaps more, it's unique when compared to how you market a book or prepare for a book launch. Have you found, what does that kind of look like, I guess, when you're marketing an anthology, and how does it compare to launching a novel, for example?
Yeah, well, I can share what I've done so far. I mean, my anthology is coming out in November 11th, so there isn't too much concrete that I've done so far except worry.
that comes with any length publication.
Well, okay, all right, to put a positive spin on it, also to, you know, tighten it up because we just finished the editing stages and to get excited about it. But, you know, so we don't have a lot in place, me and the publisher, yet, besides, you know, the typical things that Nine Star does, which is it will get up on NetGalley, they'll, you know, do a blog tour, they'll reach out to, you know, folks that they're connected with in the blogosphere, etc. But one idea that I did have that I am, you know, very soon going to be doing is getting some early copies to other authors that I know who have written short fiction, and actually I think in both cases have published anthologies, and hopefully getting them to blurb it so that that's something that I could include, if not it within the book based on the timing, but at least, you know, on my website and other places like the Amazon page, etc. So kind of getting some testimonials to so that people who recognize these authors, they read anthologies, will, you know, see, oh, this has a great stamp of approval on it. You know, besides that, you know, one thing I have noticed, I've mentioned that I used to write short fiction a lot more frequently and would be looking to publish it. But there seemed to be less types of media that is, you know, either short fiction specific or anthology specific. And I'm talking about in the world of like review blogs, etc. But I, you know, I do see at the same time that, you know, there are some gay romance blogs, for instance, that will, you know, review anthologies from time to time. There are some gay, just general gay lit blogs that will do reviews for that. So, you know, I mean, I'm going to be taking some of those, you know, typical types of steps and seeing like what kind of, you know, leverage I can get from, you know, other authors who are, you know, respected in this particular world of anthologies.
It seems like you've got a nice plan together here. I feel like you don't need to maybe worry as much as, I know it's only natural to worry, but it feels like you've got a plan laid out here, and it's something that in the world of marketing, one thing that I have found, regardless of whether it's for a novel or you're trying to raise awareness for an upcoming event, etc., I just feel like that worry is part of the process, and we tend to get better over time at minimizing the worry and building on what we created for ourselves and for our readers and our event attendees in the past. So I'm sure you're in better shape than you probably even realize.
Well, thank you for saying that.
I'll definitely keep that in mind
for sure.
And I know we were talking a bit about what it is you like to write and how your short fiction tends to manifest insofar as matters of mythology are concerned. But why don't we explore that a little bit more? Let listeners know, if you would, what's really at the heart of this anthology, and what do you hope that those who read it take away from it in the end?
Sure. So we actually just settled on the title, and the title is Slashed and Mashed: Seven Gaily Subverted Stories. And they span classical mythology, Hungarian folklore, which is actually part of my heritage, Japanese folklore, the Grimm's Brothers fairy tales, Amerindian spiritualism, the Arabian Nights, and Africana folklore. So it's quite a range, and there's definitely a mix of moods and settings, even though it's all, you know, in the area of folklore, legend, myth, etc. The heart, I'd say, is celebrating gay experiences and relationships. That can be done in a lot of different ways, in a lot of milieu. But for me, I've always been drawn to myth and fantasy as a context for exploring how gay men live their lives. Diversity is also important to me. So while you often think of fairy tales and myths as focusing on the young, handsome, adventurous prince, I wanted to include gay characters across the lifespan. So there are some of those young adult heroes. I'm not going to lie about that. But I also have stories with men in their 30s, 40s, and older. So one example, I don't know how familiar you or your listeners are with the Japanese Momotaro legend, but it starts out with an infant boy being taken in by an elderly couple when they find him floating down the river inside a peach, which is a pretty awesome start to any story.
Yeah, anyway. I would agree.
And there are variations of that part of the story, some involving Momotaro's caretakers being a wife and a husband, other with it just being an older woman. I was drawn to imagine it being two older men who had partnered and thinking about what challenges it would bring up for them to adopt a child back in 17th century Edo Japan. My hope is there's something for people of all ages, I guess, would be one answer to your question there. And to the extent that the stories span from Europe to Japan to the Middle East to South Africa to, I'm sorry, to South America and to Africa, I also, you know, want to give voice to underrepresented points of view as well, so that it's not just another, you know, riff on Grimm's fairy tales, for example.
Yeah, it seems like you have a lot of really engaging, diverse cultural mythos that has this really nice, inclusive cast, you know, from one story to the next. So kudos to you. It seems really interesting. And I'm sure a number of listeners to this podcast, as well as your regular listeners, or your regular readers, I should say, will find a lot to love in that anthology. So thanks so much for joining.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And thank you so much for joining me for this episode. We'll have to do it again some other time.
It was great, Ryan. I appreciate your time, and shout out to all your listeners. It's Raycast is the place to be.
And so concludes my interview of Andrew J. Peters, whose Slashed and Mashed anthology will debut with Nine Star Press in November 2019. Thanks so much to Andrew for joining me, and thanks to you, dear listeners, for tuning in. I'd also like to thank the RightsCast Network's patrons for their financial support of our programming, which comes in the form of per-episode or per-month contributions at patreon.com/rightscast. The RightsCast Network family of patrons get some wonderful perks and rewards in exchange for their support, including early ad-free access to every episode of our programming, discounts on my editing services, and RightsCast Network swag. Sound like something you'd be into? The amazing Laura Hazen certainly is, and I owe her an additional tip of the cap for her support at $3 per episode. So whether you can chip in $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month, start contributing to the programming you value today by visiting patreon.com/rightscast. That's patreon.com/rightscast. Coming up next on the Rightscast Network is a Novel Approaches episode on how to write satisfying endings. Join me and Novel Approaches co-host Sion Ashleman for that episode, which will debut on August 9th, 2019. Until that episode debuts, though, you can find the Rightscast Network online at rightscast.net or as Rightscast on Twitter, and I'm at rrcampbellrights.com or I am rrcampbell on Twitter. That's all for now. Until next time, this is R.R. Campbell signing off. Write on and write well. This is the Rightscast Network at rightscast.net.